Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome to season 2, episode 20 of the Homesteading UK podcast. I'm Alan. I'm here with my mate Mike. How you doing, Mike?
All right, mate. We're both having a vision.
Oh dear, not a good one. Not a good one.
We've just discovered something, haven't we?
We have indeed.
I'll let you.
So we've just discovered that last episode was the 50th episode of the podcast, which I don't know why we didn't clock it before. I guess it's because
I didn't know I had so much drivel in me, mate.
No, I did. So that means that, in fact, because the first episode is actually not out there in the wild, this is the 50th episode that's been released. So thank you very much for those of you who've been listening.
We should do some form from the beginning. Giveaway, should we?
Well, we did think about a giveaway. I'm not sure people would want one. We might give away, though, mate.
Perhaps the biggest thing we could do is, like, stop.
No, don't do that. That'll upset a few people. So we're getting back together again after, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that. Try and catch up, see how we're doing. And I've got sort of an idea for a second segment, or perhaps even a third segment later on today, depending on how we go for time.
Ambitious, isn't it?
Well, it is, but, you know, we'll make the most of it, eh? It's all good fun, nice to catch up, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
So what have you been up to?
Well, the rain's getting me down.
It just, eh?
The weather here in the UK has been really wet and dreary and windy and cold. We've had isolated bursts of sun where you can actually feel sunshine and the warmth of it. But other than that, it has been very wet. And in itself, that it's not really a problem because the temperatures are creeping up.
Yeah.
But it does make the ground pretty unworkable.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't put my potatoes in yet because I just can't get near the ground. No. And so it means that I'm holding things back quite a lot, quite considerably actually. And it's done a couple of things. It's obviously meant that you have to wait for certain things, but I think that's something we could talk about today.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, yeah, it's all very well if it says something on the back of a seed packet, but if it's not right, don't think that it's the be all and end all things.
Yeah.
But the other thing which shone into focus for me was that the value of somewhere or something indoors to work in.
Yep.
Because it just gives you a little bit of ownership or the availability of not being such a, you know, reliant on good weather.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about my unheated plastic greenhouse at home.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously at the farm, the polytunnel is coming into its own. This is when it really, this time now, and around October, November, for me, are when it's like so apparent, the beauty of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think we'll probably talk a bit about it when we talk about salad later, but I bought that small plastic greenhouse, which I think I spoke about in the last episode.
Mm.
I've rented that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But already, it's just so nice to go and stand or sit in that with a little potting table and just be out of the elements.
Yeah.
And it's not only me who appreciates it. So the ability to be in control of the irrigation of those plants and just reduce the wind and pest damage.
Yeah.
It's just incredible, the difference it makes. So things in my front garden haven't moved really, if I'm being totally honest with you. My strawberries haven't moved.
No.
They're just tiny little starts of new growth. But it's just too cold and wet, and the wind following the wet means that the temperature of the soil is very low.
Yeah.
And but the alternative at the difference inside the tunnel is amazing.
Hmm.
So it's getting up quite high, the temperature.
Presumably the soil inside's quite nice still, is it?
Yeah, in
the tunnel, yeah.
I'll talk about
workable
tunnel
and dry, you know.
The tunnel is probably, well, that's just like, yeah, I mean, that's much more controllable. But
yeah.
But again, it's an unheated tunnel, remember?
Yep,
so the fluctuations in temperature night and day are evident, but it still is a lot nicer to work in there than outside. And it is dry as a bone if I don't irrigate it.
Yeah.
What I've been trying to learn over this last couple of months is the regularity of watering in the winter.
Okay.
And I probably had about 8 weeks where I didn't water anything.
Yeah.
Just because it wasn't going anywhere, the dampness in the soil. Well, anyway, I thought you was going to start.
No, I'll let you start this time, mate.
We did get interrupted there, so we're not in a private area, are we?
No,
mate?
No,
we're in an undisclosed location.
Yeah, I can't say where it is.
Paparazzi might turn up, bro. But we were talking about what we've been doing, and I was talking about the benefits of having that undercover space. And we will come back to that because obviously that might go on to the topic we're going to talk about later. But as far as the things I've been doing over the last week or two, it has been a mixture of, been doing just like general work and fixing stuff on the site, but there has been a lot of sewing, And I know that's something that people have shared online as well. It's been lovely to see some photos of people sharing what they've been doing and stuff like that. Obviously, I know that in different parts of the world, some people are still under really heavy snow. I know that some people are coming to the end of their growing season, actually. They're getting into that autumnal harvest time, whereas here in the UK, it's very much... There's a difference now between winter. We're in spring now.
Yeah.
And it's noticeable. It's taken nearly till the end of March to be noticeable.
I agree with that.
But I think that things are growing now when you sow them, rather than you, you look at them and then the top of the compost gets that green algae on the top and you think, oh, I'm actually looking too hot, is it?
Yeah. Well, the grass is growing again now, which is one of the indicators, isn't it? But also, you know, generally the plants are growing a bit. You're starting to see the leaves just starting to come out now. Burst, you know, the buds are bursting on most of the trees now, slowly but surely, one by one. So as you can tell that spring is here, but I wouldn't say yet it's warm. It's probably about 10 degrees today, isn't it?
No, I think, and this is this comes back to what we were just talking about, there's a big difference between sowing things indoors and thinking, oh, it says I can sow these carrots, early carrots in March outside. Good, well, good luck.
Yeah.
One, good luck making a seed drill. Two, good luck. I just don't think it's warm enough. And so,
No, I think that's really important to say is that you can, it will say you can.
Yeah.
And I'm going to suggest that in most cases, probably not a great idea.
Not outside.
Not outdoors yet.
There's not many things I can actually... And every ground is different. Mm. You know, maybe if I had a really nice, well, free-drained raised bed, I might be able to do some things, but it's still really wet.
Which is what I can say is that I will be sowing outdoors in the next week or so, because with the allotment and the no-dig that I've gone over to and the combination of that with the slope that it's on and the chalk that it's on, the soil there actually is in pretty good nick,
so I could start sowing.
But it doesn't mean it's warm. No. And that's another thing altogether, because for some things like beetroot, remember we did that a few years ago.
No chance.
Too cold just yet.
But I have been doing an awful lot of indoor sowings.
Me too.
Hundreds and hundreds of trays.
Yeah.
And it's very much things which are then going to be sown again. Probably in about 2 weeks' time, I'll do another sowing of practically everything I've done already, just to get those kind of that batch stuff going on.
Yeah, and get your succession going.
Some of the things that we're doing now are going to be going through the shop at work. You know, as a farm shop's going to be coming online probably by June, I'd say. That when we'll have the first amount of crops to come through. But if you're at home, it is even now important to start thinking about sowing some stuff early, but then making sure that in 5 or 6 weeks you follow that up with the next lot of sowing. And this lot might give you your kind of your first crop, but I wouldn't be too worried about doing loads now, because inevitably the ones you sow later seem to catch up with the first lot anyway.
I think that's, there's a lot to be said for that. I think there have been times when I've done it and you get away with it and you get an earlier crop, but not by more than a few days or a week or
so. And not quantity-wise, not a lot more.
So if you've got lots of space...
That's our guard dog. We're actually on an Australian cattle ranch station. No, we're not really.
So if you've got lots of space and you can afford to give some of that over and risk that, you know...
Listen, let's not cut the crap here, mate. We all know, we all get excited. That's what actually happens. It's not about being organised. It's like... I can't hold it no more.
No.
I think I might have seen a sunbeam. I'm going out, I'm saying some stuff, right? That's actually what happens out.
That was me Monday night.
That was it. That's what it is. Monday, you're there, Monday.
Sun's shining.
I could put my shorts on. I could put my shorts on and get outside.
Get in the greenhouse.
We get excited, don't we?
Yeah.
And that's part of it. You know, we've all been in for the winter and then we think, oh man, things would grow in this. And you're right, they would if it stayed the same for the next 3 months, but it doesn't. But I think that's definitely part of it. But there are some jobs which are all right to do now. And something I've been exploring over the last couple of weeks is sowing peas early. And I've not grown a lot of peas before previously. I've done, obviously, peas for main crop last year. But the first lot of peas I've put down are for the Oregon sugar pod, Mange 2, and to eat the shoots. To eat the shoots of the peas. And we are going to talk about some stuff later on where this is going to dovetail in nicely with. But... it is exploring those crops which you might not even take to full maturity, as well as having something early. You're also going to maybe have things which, it might seem a little bit like infanticide to eat a whole baby lettuce. But yum.
Yeah. I think if you're talking about pea shoots, you could have been doing those for 6 weeks already.
Absolutely. Well, they've been in
maybe even a bit more with the right conditions, indoor sort of.
Well, mine went in conditions around when we done. How they're probably about a month out.
Yeah.
So, and they're up now. We can, you can take your first harvest off of them.
Yeah. And I've done Oregon sugar pod, and they're up probably an inch above the ground.
Yeah. Already. I just don't actually like them. That's my problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
all right. Okay.
But the people who are associated with the farm, they do like them.
Yeah.
So I grow them early shoots for those.
Yeah.
They're not really the sort of thing I think you could really sell in a shop, because they don't like, they're so shelf unstable. You're going to get a day.
Yeah.
You're better off to go and pick them yourself and take them home, or include them in something that you might sell in the shop, like if you were doing some cooking there or having a garnish or whatever. There's no shelf stability on them.
No.
So so really they're for the people who are there who are working on the farm and stuff like that. So, but I don't, like I say, I don't particularly like them, so it's just, that's how it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
So we've been doing, like I say, lots of sowing, and there's not much I haven't sown.
No.
So it's probably easy to say I haven't done my carrots yet.
Yeah.
Because I don't really like moving them. They don't really.
They don't transport well.
I think
talked about it before.
Yeah, I think if you can get them really small in a plug and put them in, you might get some carrots, but it's just not worth it.
One of two things is going to happen. It's going to stunt the growth of the root, and so what you'll get is a nice big lump of root at the top, and then a really thin taper down from
there.
Or they split. That's the two things that tend to happen.
So I'm happy to wait. I'm
happy to wait.
But I have done a lot of other things. And I think the one that always catches people out for early sowings are the crops that you might associate with real hot weather.
Mm-hmm.
So the chilies and the peppers and the aubergines, they're all in a propagator box. So they have got a little bit of heat. Yeah. So that's a homemade wooden box with a bit of glass on the top with heat mats in it. And they're all up. They're all up now, and if anything, I'm trying to hold them back a bit, actually. So during the day, I take the lid off the propagator box, and if it's, you know, pretty warm, I actually turn the root heat off.
Yeah.
And that's just so that they don't get too leggy more than anything else.
Well, I've, like you, been sowing a lot, but pertinent to this is I've got tomatoes, which I've already transplanted. So they would have been sown now just over a month ago.
Yeah.
And they were getting up to a reasonable size. I wanted them out of the trays they were in. So I transplanted them into smallish pots.
Yeah.
Not 9 centimetre, whatever the size is above that.
10.
I've gone into,
13.
Maybe 13, I think. Or 12. Yeah, something like 12 or 13, probably. So I've transplanted into those pots.
Count is not bad now.
Well, I planted them deep because, of course, the hairs on the side will root up eventually anyway. And obviously they're sitting in those pots for now, but I reckon we're probably about 2.5 weeks away from the likelihood of me having a frost now gone.
Yeah,
I know that the last frost date might be a bit later than that, but the reality where I am is in my particular microclimate is very unlikely.
Yeah, but what's
I've got indoor space, I've got grass to keep them safe anyway.
And what's nice is that, you know, realistically, you could probably still wait a month and sow your tomatoes, and you still get some tomatoes. They'd just be a lot later on. And
I think you're into now. For me, you want to be sowing them now if you haven't.
Yeah, well, and that's exactly what I'm doing this week.
If you haven't already, you should be sowing your tomatoes. It should be a priority at this point. And certainly your chilies, you should be.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you've not got long for them to be.
And all of that is because they need a nice long growing season. But it does depend on where you're going to put them. So, you know, if you haven't got enough space to grow your tomatoes and chilies and peppers outside, and they're going to be inside, They'll mature quicker because of the heat.
Yep.
If you have to grow your tomatoes and things outside, that's why they need a longer season, especially peppers and chilies. They've got quite a long maturity, haven't they?
They need longer than the tomatoes. So if you haven't done them, that will be a priority. But I've got them now. Because I've got the glass, I can hold them under it. And this is what we've spoken before about having your facility. Depending on what facilities you've got, depending on what availability you've got for growing things. That's all it is.
Honestly, though... I just forgot how good those Wilco plastic powerhouses are, mate.
Oh, really?
It's just 6x4.
Yeah.
But it makes all the difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, would rapidly become something. If I had to rely on growing food at home, I don't think I could actually do without it.
Yeah.
Not in order to start things off and give them a really good start. And then to clear it out and then grow tomatoes and things like that on in under glass. And then in the winter, you could grow a lot in there.
Yeah.
You really could.
Well, there was a question on the Facebook group earlier this week, I think it was, or end of last week, about heating a greenhouse, what you'd use for heating a greenhouse, from Mark. Thank you, Mark, for your contribution. And I did put a response on there. And And I suppose it's worth just briefly touching on that, because although I've got the two greenhouses, one's heated, one isn't, the only real reason that the one that's heated is heated is just a bit for that surety. It's that insurance that if there were to be a frost, and there was some suggestion there might have been one last week, beginning of this week even as well, never happened, but it's that surety that it's not going to get below freezing in the greenhouse, pretty much whatever happens. And so having that confidence really helps with me being able to sow loads of tomatoes early. If I sow 80 tomatoes and then I lose them all overnight, that's like I'm starting again from ground zero, and if it's at the wrong time of year, that's really bad news.
Yeah.
If you're sowing half a dozen,
not so bad.
It's not such a big deal, because you could go and buy plants. So that's what I do it for. Obviously, I've got a heated propagator as well, which I use. To be honest with you, I probably can get away with just using the windowsill in the house. It just gives me a little bit of extra.
No, you must have some big old windows.
Well, just one windowsill, but my heated propagator holds two seed trays.
Right. Okay.
It's not massive.
Yeah, and the one that I built probably would hold four or eight.
Yeah.
Not eight, four or six, sorry. Yeah. But it's only for the germination, really, isn't
it? That's what you need to
If you've got an unheated greenhouse, don't forget as well that you can actually put a cloche in a greenhouse, and that will certainly protect down the frost. And a cloche doesn't need to be anything fancy. It could be one of those plastic storage crates, you get a see-through one.
Yep.
That's actually quite good if you turn it upside down and stand your seed trays in it. And then you've got a cloche in a greenhouse, so you've got those two layers of protection. It definitely won't get below
the other thing I've done previously when I've had larger tomatoes in the greenhouse and there's been a threat of frost is, whether the heating's on or not, bubble wrap.
Oh, okay.
Just laid over the top.
Right.
Just laid over the top of them. It's just enough. A bit of bubble, and everyone's got bubble wrap these days.
Yeah.
Like, it comes through your door, doesn't it?
So, you could probably use fleece or whatever, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could use horticultural fleece. You could use old woolen jumpers. I mean, do you know what I mean? Whatever you've got, as long as you can suspend it above without damaging the plants, whatever it takes, just to make sure that that's not going to get down below freezing.
So,
it's at 1 or 2 degrees.
With regards to actually providing a heat source, I've actually not ever done that, apart from having... No, I don't think I've ever. I've never. But obviously, your options in the UK and probably beyond would be to use a really old school paraffin heater.
Yep.
You can pick them up quite reasonably. And obviously, they're running on paraffin, which is a fossil fuel, and you might not want to go down that route. I know that some people put night lights under a terracotta flower pot just to keep the residual heat up. Yep. I don't know how long they last, is my only thing.
About an hour, a tea light, I think.
Yeah, but you could get longer burning candles.
Unless
you're
going to get up in the middle of the night, that's not very realistic.
No, but you can get longer burning candles, can't you? Like an 8-hour candle or what have you. And that would probably keep the temperature above...
I feel like that's an expensive way to do it, if I'm honest.
Yeah, candles are expensive, but they're not expensive if you've got bees and got the time to make candles in the winter, have you?
That is true.
And it's those. I would say that there are other ways that you can keep it warm, but they might be more tricky. So I know that you could put two sacks of horse manure in there.
Yeah,
and that would keep the temperature up. You don't have to use it.
It's fresh horse manure.
Yeah, put that into something like that. That would certainly work. A lot of other people move their... they move their small water butts inside their greenhouse, and then that will heat up during the day, and then it will release its heat over the night. That's like a bit like a heat store.
Yeah, not, thermal mass of the water.
Yeah, so that would work. And the other thing you can put in there is a chicken. Each chicken's about a watt of energy. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did.
So, you know, that might be something that you could work with if you could keep them apart from your plants, of course. But it might be that you could put a small run inside your greenhouse or a coop, and you could keep them in there. And I suppose it's not unreasonable to think is that my small plastic greenhouse butts against my quail house, and there's probably a bit of residual heat from
it's a bit like the fox with the grain and the boat and the chicken, and you've got to get them all from one side to the other. Yeah,
well, yeah, but mine are so on one side of the house is the quail run, and those quail must be generating heat.
Okay, separate, aren't they? Just imagine what would happen if I put my chickens in the greenhouse, mate. It'd be carnage.
You wouldn't have a lot of tomatoes left.
There'd be much of anything left in there.
No.
But no, that's
so there's been those jobs happening.
I was just gonna say I've got tube heater in mine.
Okay.
I forget what it cost. I imagine they've gone up in price since I had it anyway.
What's that work for?
It works from electric.
Okay.
So I've run an electric cable in there. I've got one of those outdoor extension cables with the ceiling box that just sits in the corner of the greenhouse, and then that plugs in.
Yeah, it can't be beyond the realms of possibility in this day and age to find something that's solar powered that just generates enough heat to tick your greenhouse over. It can't be, can it? Even in the winter.
I don't know. I think it might be quite expensive, because the problem is that generating heat requires quite a lot of electricity, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We talked about before. And so having enough solar at this time of year to generate enough heat to make a difference, I'm not convinced.
Yeah, I think you might have to go down the 12-volt route and have a battery, which is just getting trickle-charged by the daylight, and then probably ease even that enough to keep that up.
That might work.
And then even if it came on a timer switch for 2 or 3 hours in the night just to raise it, if it drops, you know, to 1 degree. I don't know. I mean,
my heater is doing is maintaining it round about 10 degrees, which is what it's been outside today anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not me. I had it up at about 14 the other day when it was a bit warmer.
Yeah.
But that's the best it's getting to. But that's enough to germinate onions.
Yeah.
It's enough to germinate mostly other than your tomatoes and your chilies in warm weather.
Yep.
Heat-loving plants. It's enough to germinate them. So that does the job. Anyway, so I've multi-sown a load of stuff. That's what I did on Monday night.
Yeah, I was doing that too. Monday night though.
With a view to obviously just planting it out as the plug. So I've multi-sown some beetroot and some radish. Just going to put those in just because I didn't feel the soil temperature was warm enough. But I can put them in the greenhouse into compost. It's relatively warm. And so they should germinate in there relatively readily. And then when I feel it's warm enough, I can then start sowing out. And that'll be, you know, like I said, next week or the week after probably, once they're up and moving. I've done my peas, I've done broad beans, leeks.
I haven't done my leeks yet.
Have you not?
Nah.
It's probably a little bit early for leeks, to be fair.
All I end up doing is holding them in green trays before I dip them out. And you can put them in July.
So I've done a few. And I've done rocket. I did, might we say, some rocket. I did some salad leaves, but we'll come on to that a bit more later on. But like you say, pretty much anything that you could sow now, you know, you can pretty much. Certainly in the next month or so, you can sow pretty much anything. But just bear in mind that soil temperature is really important and you're probably better to wait.
Yeah, than and to it'll rush catch up anyway.
Because it will catch up.
And the other thing is, you know, if you're someone like myself and I like to sow my potatoes normally on St. Patrick's Day, but they would rot.
Yep.
They'd rot in the ground and, you know, there's a lot of common sense in gardening there that people probably think doesn't apply, but it really does. If you're looking in a hole and it's full of water, don't put potato in it to grow.
They don't swim very well.
It's going to go a bit mushy, you know. with perhaps a single exception of rice, don't worry about it.
I think rice might like it a bit warmer.
Watercress, maybe. I don't know.
Watercress, maybe, yeah. Yeah. So have you been harvesting some good stuff? Because I've had some lovely like landcress. My PSB's in now.
I think that... To not repeat myself later on.
Yeah.
Clatonia though, or miner's lettuce.
Yeah.
Corn salad.
Yeah.
And rocket have just been superstars indoors.
Absolute so when were they superstars. Sown?
August.
Okay. So yeah.
September.
Yeah. End of last year for this spring.
Maybe.
Yeah.
And they have been. But we'll talk all about all that in a moment. Yeah, but. Yeah. So that and the pea shoots now mean that there's a bowl of salad there.
Yep.
But purple sprouting broccoli has been going. I sowed a lot of spring cabbages, but we finished them now. So I followed that up with something called winter green, which are basically like a collard green or a spring green.
Amazing.
So they don't really heart up. No. You get a little bit of a loose head, but they put on some beautiful leaves. And so we're eating them at the moment. So they're delicious. I'm eating the broccoli spears. From my purple sprouting broccoli, they're giving very, very well.
Yep.
Probably a bit early though, because what I'm not going to get is any broccoli in May, because my plants will be going over by then. And that's because they're indoors and in a tunnel.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Right? And so next year, when I've got more tunnels, two of which will be temperate and I've got, you know, mesh sided, they'll still get a little bit warmer, but I will be able to have a much better growing season.
Yeah.
But as soon as they, you know, I mean, they're still going strong at the moment, but they will flower soon and then we'll just eat all the leaves and then. To be honest with you, I was learning how to use the stems as well, which looked like the most woodiest thing ever. But you can actually slice them really thin on your mandolin and just cook them up and eat them. Apparently they're great. So
I'm on record as saying I use the stems. You know, when you buy a bit of Calabrese in the supermarket, I use pretty much all of that.
Yeah, I don't know how nice they'll be, but I'm not sure about
the woody bit. So I mean, there comes a point where, you know, like...
It's a tree, bruv, isn't it?
So I've taken old ones out and I literally will take a hammer to them.
Yeah, you have to.
And smash them up and then put them on the compost, right? But they are literally like trees inside.
Wood,
I'm not sure that's the edible bit.
See.
But there'll come a point where you
carve a spoon out of it, I suppose.
Broccoli spoons.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So we're eating that. We're also, I've got some stored things, but I'm not going to talk about those today.
No.
We've got the coriander and the parsley in the tunnel. Are so prolific now. Mm-hmm. They're really coming to their own.
Yep.
And they've really booted on and kicked on and things like that. there's not a lot else to eat with regards to fresh picked vegetables.
I had some kale. Last of mine.
My kale's gone to seed now.
Is it?
Flower, yeah. Right? So the lower leaves are still all right.
Yeah.
But all of the top growth is just looks beautiful. Beautiful, yeah. Lovely yellow flowers. Yeah. My tortoise eats those, so that's all right.
Okay,
that's but good. But it won't be long before I take the tops off and I will just see if they'll flush again.
So I took my Cavolo Nero out about 2 weeks ago. Just after the last recording, I think, probably. And that was one of the things that got smashed up and then chucked on the compost.
Yeah.
You know, I took some for the chickens and that. But,
Still eating.
The actual cottagers kale that I did, kale cottagers, which is a variety that I sowed, and the Red Russian that I sowed, both giving really lovely now and really tasty, really good. And I've had the last few of my leeks as well, they've come out. American landcress.
Oh, leeks, mate. I'm eating, sorry. Yeah.
American landcress, I've got to talk to you about this.
Mm.
This is like the find of 2022. Mm. Heard about it on one of the other podcasts I listened to. And, mate, I am completely in love with it. Mm. Because I sowed it towards the end of last year. It came good soon enough for me to have some last year.
Yeah.
And it is now coming right into its own. And it's really flavourful. And it will take, you know, you get your...
What's it taste like?
It's almost a tiny bit minty. It's not minty. But it's got the zing of a watercress.
Right, okay.
It's a little bit firmer than a watercress. Yeah. Quite a bit firmer than a watercress.
I've grown it previously. Some people might not be au fait with it.
It's a really zingy kind of quite a strong, almost minty flavour. I can't quite describe it, but a small amount of a bit of that mixed in with other lettuce, mate, and it is just the business.
You cook it as well, do you think?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I bother, to be honest.
No.
I like a good salad, and actually, it's lovely as it is. So, and that actually thrown in with whatever other bits of like beet leaves that I've got, or if, you know, I've got some salad that I've bought from the supermarket. I've not done brilliant overwintering salad this year, but mixing that in with other lettuce and that, really, really tasty.
Great.
Loving that.
Good bang for buck as well, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, like really good, yeah. One plant is really quite large now, and you go and keep cutting from it and it comes again.
Yeah.
Really good.
So I've got leeks as well, so they're still going, and they're still, I mean, they look a bit withered on the outside, but you take that one leaf off and they're absolutely superb. They're such a good onion substitute. Well, they are an onion, obviously, member of the same family. But for people who haven't eaten leeks, you can think about them like your, you know, standalone ingredient for a soup or what have you. But think about them as, oh, my onions have run out. They just fit the gap.
Yeah.
When your stored onions start to sprout and your spring onions aren't big enough to eat, they just fit that gap perfectly.
Yeah.
And maybe think about them as just part of your rotation. And if you're not someone who really likes leeks, I still think it's worth, in your actual onion bed or patch, put in two or three rows because you'll be so glad of them, won't you, time of the year?
I've really enjoyed having them. And I have to say, after I think last time you mentioned about having them as a vegetable, and I said, oh, no, I'll just chuck them in stuff, right? Well, weirdly, my mum was around. She comes around once a week and she looks after the kids for us, and she often cooks dinner for us while she's there, which really appreciate it. And she did creamed leeks with one of the dishes that we had. I think we had a cottage pie or something for dinner.
Love creamed leeks.
She did creamed leeks with it. And I was like, Mike was right.
Yeah, leek gratin as well.
So good. I don't know about the gratin and cheese, but the...
Oh, it's breadcrumbs with it.
Yeah.
Because it goes into that... Because they really dissolve, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So, and I like a good cockle leaky soup, mate.
Yeah. Well, these were the homegrown leeks as well. And they were so delicious. They were delicious. Great. They were really good.
Yeah. It makes good stuffing as well, leeks.
Yeah.
You can make really good stuff. If you cut them really fine and then mix them with your breadcrumbs. Your egg yolk, you can make really nice stuffing balls with those as well. So I've been doing that. What else have I been doing? My chickens have really come into their own.
Oh, yeah. Great, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's another good sign of spring in the UK is when the birds really start to lay well. And this week, the quail started laying. Yeah. So I've just started getting those. But I'll wait probably wait till next recording before I start thinking about taking some eggs to incubate.
Yeah. Okay.
But the chickens are producing really well, very well.
First full house day the other day, a few days ago. All six hens laid, same day. It's really nice. I like that.
It's nothing like them, is it? So that's what I've been doing. I've been continuing with... I had a couple of weeks off my bread and my cake making, but just because life was busy and we were away a bit. But I've got back into that routine and that's been really nice just to do the no need. The sourdough is still on the hold. I'll wait until it's a bit warmer, I think, in my house. But it will come. It will definitely come. So I've been doing that.
I did something interesting at the weekend for me because 10 years ago, I just said to you I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I was like actually quite pleased with myself.
Yeah.
Because my green, my under the unheated greenhouse, the door had broken. What had happened is the wheel basically had sheared off. And actually, when I took it apart, what had actually happened was that the door, the little hole where the wheel was supposed to go through, was what was damaged. It was broken. And so I managed to get a new wheel, managed to drill the aluminium, put the new wheel on, put the door back on. And like literally 10 years ago, I'd have told you I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's the simplest thing in the world, right? It's so easy. It took me about 10 minutes, probably.
And saved you how much?
Well, buying a new greenhouse, potentially. Yeah, that's what I'd have done 10 years ago. I don't know. But
you probably wouldn't have.
No, I probably wouldn't have done
You'd have probably put two hinges on the door and made a door that opened a different way, or done something.
Yeah, found something. But I was really proud of myself because it was like, this is, you know.
Oh, look, my work here is done.
Yeah, well, I come back to what I said the other week, though, about, you know, I've done a few greenhouses now. It kind of makes a bit more sense to me. And I suppose that familiarity gives you the confidence, doesn't it, to feel like you can have a go. Having all the right gear as well helps, doesn't it?
Having the gear and knowing where it is. And
well, I'm working on that. That's one of my jobs. I've got a couple of weeks coming up. That's one of my other jobs for the next couple of weeks.
Get your bench made, mate, aren't we?
A couple of weeks of off work, and I'm going to try and get some more shell. I've got to buy some timber, and that is some money that is now at the moment, buying wood. Mm. But I need the wood for the shelving, for the garage, so I can put everything out of the way to make space for the bench. That's for me to then start tidying it, because it's still really too full.
Well, I'm going to make a new timber store, so that's my plan.
Is it?
Yeah, I might make mine out of roundwood, though, so I might just take chestnut poles home and then roundwood make it and timber frame it and just make a really nice... I'm tired of having wet logs.
Yeah, that's what you said last time. Yeah,
so I'm going to get that down. That'd be something I'll try and do. Well, I think it'll be... I'll wait till it gets a bit nicer weather, though. It's just so much nicer working outdoors when everything ain't wet.
Yeah.
And there's no rush where the timber is now. Just get split and put in there. I don't want to move it twice, so... Once I build the store, I'll bring the timber back because I don't want to move it and then have to move it again.
Yeah, makes sense to me.
So I've been doing a bit of that. But other than that, though, mate, it's been just... I've been doing, you know, a bit of research, a bit of this, a bit of that. And that's basically what's taken up most of the time, though. Yeah. But I have been doing a lot of soil improvement in the tunnels and trying to use what I've got. And, you know, like everyone, you know, resources aren't infinite. And so we'd had some mushroom compost delivered, and then we'd had... A friend who we knew delivered some cow muck and stuff like that, which had come out of their stables. But, you know, we're not in a position to just go and buy enough manure to fill a whole tunnel. So we were using topsoil, which we'd got from another source. And you know, filling a whole polytunnel is a lot of soil.
Yeah.
A lot of soil. And I'm looking at it knowing that, you know, it's not exactly how I would like it to be.
Yeah.
But it's what I've got now.
Yeah.
And over the years, I'll add to it. But the first tunnel, where though when those spring greens come out, I need something to put in there for the tomatoes that are going to go in there. So, you know, even though we're on a bigger scale, it's exactly the same. You know, you might not be able to get stuff to improve your soil. So if you do see something, just make those decisions to try and get things when you can. And even if you have to store a few sacks around the side of your greenhouse of well-rotted leaf mould or compost or what have you, it comes into its own. Because one of the things that I've certainly noticed, I was going to talk about this in the next little section, but we can do it now, is it's been very noticeable how many people have decided to grow things.
Mm.
And already there are things which are unavailable.
Right.
And I know that the seed companies have reported a huge upturn in sales.
Yeah, we spoke about that last time.
Yeah, a huge upturn in sales. And even now when I'm going on, you know, because I've got quite a small brain, when I forget things, I have to go back and reorder them. And there are things that are not available now.
Right.
Certain varieties of tomatoes are not available. Yeah. Certain varieties of potatoes, obviously it's a bit late for that now, but so many things now, you know, become more tricky. And it did remind me a little bit of, you know, that those first few months of COVID where it was really tricky. But I know that there's been a massive upsurge because of the cost of living crisis more than anything else, about people who are interested in trying to grow some stuff at home. And that probably leads really nicely onto the next section.
Well, just quickly before we move on, I've been doing much the same in terms of soil improvements. So I've cleared out a lot of the beds and I've top dressed them with the compost. So I've emptied out one of my compost bins now. So I've got one more with compost that's more or less ready to go that I'll use as it is now, whether it's ready quite or not. It's just going to get used.
Yeah.
And I'll plant into that. Be all right as long as I'm not seed sowing into that one. And then obviously started looking at the new allotment, but there's not much to say about that yet. There will be next time, and I think probably next time we speak there'll be a lot of stuff to say.
Get the potatoes in.
Well, it'll be that, and it'll also be the bees, because by the time we get together, and you know, it'll be 2 or 3 weeks from today, probably by the time we get a chance to speak again,
absolutely,
it'll be actually swarm traps need to be out now, so there'll be plenty of new stuff coming along. You know, we'll be going to be too busy
as soon as the sun comes out.
You'll feel it coming. can feel it coming.
Fingers crossed, man.
Right, should we take a break here and come back and talk about something else?
All right, nice one.
Right, we're back. So I thought it'd be interesting, following on from obviously talking, actually interesting, you might have just brought it up at the end there, you know, talking about people wanting to be more self-sufficient. And one of the things that Mike taught me when he started growing on a bigger scale, well, at all really, wasn't it, was about being self-sufficient in a thing.
I think it's because I'm just so miserly. And it's like, I don't like the concept of growing a little bit of something, and I never have.
No.
Yeah, and I think that that's because I've been in a position where I've oversown varieties and had like 3 beetroot in a pot and a bit of this and a bit. And yeah, it's great to learn how to do things, but you have one meal and then it's like, oh, you know. And so for me, you know, with very limited space, I always wanted to try and be sufficient in a thing.
Yes.
And it came down to, you know, how many of that do I need to be self-sufficient in that thing? And, you know, I actually realised it was quite small, quite some of the things. That's just different. Everyone's going to be different, though, because obviously, you know, if we just take garlic, for an example, I use a lot less than you, and I can be self-sufficient in garlic, whereas you probably would have to put your whole second allotment over to it.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know, but I'd need...
You'd be peddling around Seaford on a bike, though, mate, with a few round your neck going...
I'd need 100 to 150, probably. It could be done.
Garlic cellar?
Yeah.
But, And so for me, when I was starting to plan, and we're still in a bit of a planning phase here, aren't we?
Yep.
People could still be planning their allotment
and
what they're going to sow and the time. So for me to give over a 4x4 foot bed, maybe a tiny bit bigger than that, that was actually going to solve my garlic problem for the whole year.
Yes.
Because I could store it and it was shelf stable. Yeah. Whereas to try and grow enough carrots... Mm. You have to give over quite a big space for the year.
Yeah.
However, you just start to make decisions based on what you want to grow, what you eat, and what you value.
Absolutely.
And so for me, actually growing carrots was all right because it's what we eat and we really, really enjoy it. So I'd never been able to grow enough carrots to be self-sufficient until I was at the farm now.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how much space you know. If you grow carrots well, they are really productive.
Mm.
And if you can keep that black fly off, carrot root fly off, they are a really good crop to grow. But things like potatoes and so on and so forth. And so we thought we might do a little run about becoming sufficient in certain things. And
something you said last time about if you've got a 2 foot by 2 foot space, that's 60 centimetres by 60 centimetres, as far as using metric. If that's the space you've got, then growing 2 cabbages in it is... 2 cabbages worth of dinners.
Well, it's a day, a week.
Have
some mates round.
Yeah.
Make some dolomades, that's it.
Whereas in that space, you could grow quite a lot of lettuce. And I think what I was thinking about was if people are starting out or if people got small space or they want to tip about how to...
I'll put beehive in it.
Yeah, you would. It would fit. Perfect. Yeah.
I'll put a natural hive in it. With some flower pots on top. That's what I'd grow mine.
I tell you, you can get one of your bags, with the tumbling tomatoes over the top of that. Jobs are good, mate. That's it. That's your 60 centimetres square. But I just thought if we went into a bit more depth about how to do be self sufficient in some crops, and particularly today, what I'd like to talk about is salad leaves because I think it's really pertinent. I think now's a good time.
I've expanded a tiny bit on leaves, but I'll get there.
All right, okay. Well, we're trying to do that. And what I did was when I was thinking about this was I've written down some kind of questions I want to ask ourselves every time we do it, and so try and frame it, because I would like to do a few of these in a row perhaps, and maybe we'll leave it then for a bit and do something else for a while, but there's a few things I wanted to do it for, and starting with the salad leaves and just trying to think about, for somebody that's new coming into it or somebody that's trying to get an idea about how to be self-sufficient in these things, what is it actually they need to be thinking about? And probably the first one, you hit the nail on the head, is how much do you use it? Because if you don't use very much, it don't take very much space.
No.
Whereas if you use loads and loads, like the garlic, then maybe you need a bit more.
Yeah.
So what are we actually talking about when we talk about salad leaves? I suppose it's a place to start, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a good place to start. And I think that I know that for myself, I'm very seasonal eating. So I actually don't really want salad at the moment. I don't want salad in the winter either.
No.
It's just, you know, I'm not that interested in it. We don't have many cold dinners in my house.
in this time.
No.
You know, even with a, you know, a potato salad and that. Oh, no, I want jacket potato. Mm. I want some hot vegetables because that's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And that's quite where we've always been like that. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's maybe that's just a traditional thing, and people have got their own likes and dislikes and stuff like that. But that's just how we are in our house.
To an element, I'm with you on it. I've not been eating a lot of salad over the winter.
No,
but every so often I really fancy salad, and actually they're having the facility to go and get that from the
but that
allotment, or some of it from the allotment.
But that will pull in quite nicely because naturally they're not as productive in the winter, works well. Yeah. However, in the summer, I don't like to cook any vegetables.
No.
I like to have my meat or my bean, whatever protein is, or my eggs. Mm. And then I actually want to pick my lettuce and my stuff on the way to sitting down outside.
Yeah.
I don't even want to bring it in the house.
Right, and a great big pile of it as well. Yeah. Not a little bit, but lots. Yeah. So I
think that it's about a combination of things which fill those gaps for you.
Yeah.
In the and I'm also aware that we're coming from a Western UK-based cuisine, and around the world, the uses of leaves are totally different.
Yes.
You know, they might be used in a totally different way in, you know, maybe Asia or Australia or America. People do different things, don't they?
Mm-hmm,
and so we're only going to talk about it from our point of view.
Yeah, but we are going to talk about different types of salad leaves. So it might be that, you know, the things that people will be familiar with. You go to the supermarket, you can buy a heading lettuce, right? Yeah. So like an iceberg or a cos lettuce or a little gem. Those sort of things people might be familiar with. Or you get the kind of the round lettuce, like a butterhead type lettuce.
Yeah.
Or you might get a bag of leaves.
Yeah, I think I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I would say that there are also you can really broaden what you can eat.
Yes.
If you will eat leaves, which you might not be that familiar with, but they might, you know, you can eat beetroot leaves.
Yes.
For instance.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're never going to turn into a beetroot because you're going to grow them for leaves. You can eat pea shoots, as we've discussed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You won't let those go to maturity and become full-grown plants with peas on. You could, but...
You can make almost all of the brassicas as microgreens.
All of the brassicas as microgreens.
Yeah.
There's a whole range of mustards or oriental leaf greens, which are fabulous in the winter.
Yeah.
There's a whole range of... people are more familiar with corn salad because it's available, but there are other varieties of landcress or clatonia that grow in the winter.
Yeah.
Sorrel. Sorrel. Hardly anyone's ever eaten sorrel in this country. It's big in the continent, though. Mm. So there's a massive variety of things that you can grow and eat. I think the most important bit of information for me about becoming self-sufficient in growing salad is that you have to change what you think it looks like, right? And by that, by all means, you can grow a Harting lettuce, right? But if you pick and harvest that lettuce in a slightly different way, it will last you for 10 meals instead of one.
Yes.
And that is probably the biggest thing to get your head round, isn't it? Because when we look in a pack and we see a round lettuce or a iceberg lettuce, that has been grown, harvested, and you eat all of it and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to grow another one. But if you harvest that particular lettuce in a different way, you get way more food.
And that gets around the space issue, because if I were to grow a row of lettuce, let's say, because my beds are 5 feet long, so let's say I did two of those side by side full of lettuce, which is what I probably will do this year.
Yeah.
In one of those rows, I could maybe grow nine or 10 heading lettuce, right? Whereas if I grew them like you're describing, or if I grow the multi-sown leaves, the cut and come again leaves, in that same space, I can increase my production.
You can increase your production
significantly.
And what you can also do is, even in my family, we can eat nine lettuces in a fortnight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I haven't got any left.
Yeah.
And I haven't got the time in between how many I'm eating and what I've got coming.
Because it'll take 12 to 16 weeks for it to grow to maturity, and then you're starting over from scratch.
Yeah. And so for me, it's about that. And if you've never seen it, I'm going to describe it to you. So imagine a stalk coming out of the ground, and on top is a lettuce, and it might get up to about a foot high.
Yep.
And so if you pick leaves off your Harting lettuce, that's what they end up looking like.
Mm-hmm.
But they can honestly last for months and months and months.
They'll just keep getting taller and taller, like a brassica, like a broccoli or something.
You must pick the outside
sprout
leaves. Don't pick the ones in the middle, even though they look nicer.
Yeah. So we're talking about those different types of lettuce that you might, you know, want to grow, or perhaps you buy at the moment. And you've spoken there straight away about kind of a technique to try and increase the production.
Yeah.
When would you be sowing those, though? What's the sowing plan look like?
Well, I've sowed a lot of lettuce now. So let's talk about now and go for it.
Now's a great time, right?
Absolutely. What I would say is that you can sow lettuce in the right conditions more or less all year round. Mm-hmm. Some lettuces are better than others at certain conditions. But the other thing to remember about lettuce is they are a cool plant.
Yes.
And I think just because we eat them in the summer, we equate them with hot summer days. They actually hate it.
Mm-hmm. They're not nearly as tasty on the hot summer days.
No, and they, well, we've had a whole episode about frying lettuce in your warehouse. But they're a cool weather plant. They're great because they grow well in a shady spot. They like quite a damp spot. And they are something which people could grow now from seed. And you'll be surprised how quick they come up, even in quite cool temperatures.
Yeah, and in fact, if you've not sown any yet, that's something you could get on with as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Because that should have been, it certainly could have been done before now.
Yeah.
And I would then be looking almost at sowing every 6 weeks, probably until it gets hot. And then I might lay off, lay off for a few weeks.
I only have a small gap in my lettuce production. And quite honestly, sometimes I just sow small 9-centimetre pots up and put them in the shade. And see what happens.
Yeah.
Because the other thing about lettuce seed is you never use it all up.
No.
You end up in 9 years looking at this bit going, I wonder if these would germinate.
This is about
a billion seeds. Yeah. And I would do that. The other thing I would definitely do is I would try, and you mentioned a couple of varieties, I'd really try and do some different varieties because even though lettuce is lettuce and it's not many people get really excited about it, I love it. Yeah. But there are so many different types out there. And I'm not going to say they all taste really different, because I'm not sure they do taste really, really different. I think there's far more interesting things to add to your salad to get if you want to take them different directions. But I like looking at my food. I like it to look nice.
Yep.
And having some red-tinged varieties, some kind of frill-leaved varieties, and some really crisp stuff and things like that. It's lovely. It's really good. The other thing I would say about choice is that I err on growing the smaller varieties, because it takes quite a long time to grow a really big, tight iceberg lettuce without it getting pest damage. But it doesn't take that long to grow a Tom Thumb, which is another variety of lettuce, which has got that nice sort of, it's not quite an iceberg, but a nice crisp heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or
a much tastier little gem for my money.
Little gem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd much rather grow those. Yeah. They actually come around quicker.
Yeah.
You can still multi-harvest those. Yeah. You can still take the leaves off.
Yeah.
But you can really over-sow them and then just take out all the in-betweens and then do your successional picking. So have a good look at the varieties.
Yeah.
And for me, and you might be growing in pots, you might be growing in trays, you might be growing in raised beds, the smaller ones might give you a bit better bang for buck.
Yeah.
Because if you discover that you've got some slug damage in the heart of one of your little lettuces, you certainly don't lose as much food as if you've got slug damage in the heart of a great big iceberg. And you might not see it for a bit longer and stuff. It's quite disheartening, that. They're more tricky to grow, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if you're combining that heading lettuce and taking the outer leaves off the heading lettuce with growing a nice mixed leaf, a lettuce leaf mix.
Yeah.
So you can buy them as a mixed leaf or a spicy mixed leaf. Often they've got the occasional herb in there, perhaps a bit of coriander, that sort of thing in there, which gives it a bit of flavour.
It's usually called cut and come again or speedy lettuce or oak leaf mix or something like that.
And you can get the salad bowl types that often are mixed in there. There's a whole load of cut and come again lettuce. And if you're mixing those two things together, what you've then got is access to a variety of different ways of using them. I think that's really important. So they're
all really happy to grow in quite shallow soil. I used to grow all my lettuce in the shade in mushroom trays, which are probably not even 4 inches deep, I'd say. You just had to water them a bit more, and they grew in 100% shade during the summer.
Yeah.
And I had four of those trays, and that fed us, my family, for all through the summer. They always have bits and pieces, but... So anyway, let's get back to spring.
So I'd be sowing both varieties of salad now.
Yeah.
And I'd be sowing the leaf, the cut and come again every 6 weeks or so, almost right the way through the year. But I wouldn't be looking to sow the heading lettuces.
No.
Probably after about the end of May, early June, myself.
Okay.
And the problem with there is, as you say, they don't like the heat. They're less likely to germinate well, but they also are very likely to bolt if it gets too hot.
Yeah.
And what that means, it sets seed and then they're too bitter to eat.
So I probably wouldn't grow big, I would grow the little headed one, so the little gem. There's a cos, the little cos, I think it's called. There's another one called Tom Thumb is my favourite.
I've got a little gem cos I've got, which is...
I like Tom Thumb, that's my favourite. Yeah. And I would sow the Lolo Rosso, because I think it's such a good giver. Seems to be a bit more drought resistant than some of the others.
It is a bit more tolerant of drought and cold as well, I think.
And it looks nice. Yeah. But alongside those things, I would be thinking about chives.
Yep.
I'd be thinking about Welsh onions now, which if people don't know, they're a kind of permanent onion, which as long as you don't go crazy, they form a small little spring onion-like or scallion-like root, and you just dig them up and then they kind of clump form and grow a bit more.
Yeah.
And if you're careful with those and if you've got enough patches, I don't actually think that's that hard to get them.
No.
And they also, they look quite... they're quite nice, so you could actually just have them in your flower bed rather than have to give over designated space.
Same with Lolo Rosso though as well, and the coloured leaves, lettuce leaves, actually you get away with mixing them in the
absolutely
mix board.
So in the spring I'd be looking at sowing those. I would also be sowing coriander now, because you can just literally sow it whenever.
And basil now as well.
Yeah, that indoors, will need a bit of heat indoors, though, won't it?
Yeah, it will need a bit of heat to get it going, but if you've got it indoors protected from frost it'd be alright.
Yeah.
By the time it gets going now, certainly where I am, by the time it gets going, it'll be warm enough that it'll go.
Yeah. So we're talking now, though, about things to sow now for really late to spring, when it really warms up.
Yeah. 12 weeks-ish.
Yeah.
Should be looking at getting harvest, so about 4 months.
10 to 14, it always says on the pack, doesn't it? Which is a bit loose, isn't it? But they're the things that you could be eating, but you could be doing your pea shoots, like I said.
Yeah.
I always feel a bit sacrilegious, but you can eat broad bean tops. They're quite nice.
I
know loads of people who like eating those.
And if you're bold enough to go foraging, there's plenty of leaf you can forage to supplement.
Well, that was my next thing, was that I would also think about having a whole kind of seasonal salad leaf eating kind of thing on the go as well, which would be which could involve you kind of being out and catching those first early crops that are coming up. And that would involve, you know, at the moment they're very small. In fact, a lot of them are not quite out yet. You know, we're talking now about the difference between what to sow and what to eat.
Yeah.
And it might be that we have to do a few crossovers like that. So as the things that are just starting to come up now that I've seen are cuckoo flower, which Lady Smock that's called in the UK. That's like a small, really peppery kind of... plant that grows kind of in fields and waysides and verges and that's out now. The very first leaves of your beech tree are quite nice. You can eat those. The first leaves of the hawthorn tree, you can eat those. You can use them to supplement your salads. They're quite nice actually. It's a little bit early for things like ramsons, but it won't be long.
I've seen that
before.
I've
that's
out
coming
in
up
in abundance where I am.
Oh really?
Yeah.
So that's one of my favourite, if not my favourite, wild green to eat.
Been out there absolutely in abundance love for a couple of weeks probably, maybe a little bit more. It's been, in the patch that I know.
Wow, that's superb. Yeah. So that would come, but we'll talk about foraging, probably in greater depth, but having a good field guide and making sure you know what you're doing, because there's a tendency at the beginning of the year for very young crops to all look very similar before they get some of those really identifying characteristics.
Sure certain what it is.
Yeah. But can I just pick back up though?
Yeah, go on.
We go back to sowing. One of the things I'm going to talk about later on is that there are actually a lot of edible flowers which you have to sow now for later.
Yep.
That you could really supplement your salad dishes with, but you can grow them in hanging baskets or you can grow them for different things. So I was thinking about growing things like nasturtiums and things like violas and calendula, all of those things, borage, which are really lovely additions to your salads, but you might need to sow some of them a bit earlier than you think, right? Yeah. And the only other one that I was thinking of, because it gives you such a big return, is I would grow some big giant sunflowers for the seeds to put in my salads.
All right,
and the other thing, even that sounds weird, is I would make sure that my pumpkins were on my rotation for the seeds to go in my salads.
Right, okay.
So I'm not just growing them for the flesh.
Yeah.
I really like pumpkin seeds in a salad.
Yeah.
And I really love sunflower seeds in a salad.
Okay.
And those giant sunflowers produce a lot of seeds,
don't
they?
Yeah, yeah.
And so why would you not make use of that as a salad ingredient? So as well as the beauty of having them in your garden, you know, some you might actually eat the physical flowers, But then you might get into your additions to your salad as well as the leaf.
Yeah.
I would definitely be growing sunflowers because I think I love sunflowers.
Well, they're
salad.
Lovely, don't they? I grow them just for the fun of growing them. Trouble I have where I am is keeping hold of them.
Well, the birds have them.
The birds. I think the squirrels have a pop as well.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I have a nightmare with squirrels in my garden because of the woodland at the back. But just quickly, because we're going to have to take a brief pause in a second. Growing conditions. You've mentioned that they don't like it too hot. Mm. They don't like it too sunny. Soil-wise, pretty unfussy in my experience.
They are unfussy, but like a lot of plants, I think perhaps more than others, it does need to be particularly well-drained for leaf.
Yeah.
Because the danger is any residual moisture is going to lead to some rotting off or dampening
and
off or mould and also encourage slugs to that particular environment. So a free draining, even if it's not in direct sunlight, free draining soil becomes particularly important. And that's why actually pots and containers are pretty good for this sort of thing.
Yeah. But don't let them dry out.
Don't let
them bolt if you do.
They will bolt if they do. Yeah. So, but then your mulches could come into place, couldn't they? Yeah. Having a ground cover of a mulch, which retains some of that moisture underneath, is quite good for people to do. But I have one bed, and I've spoke about it before, which doesn't receive hardly any sun, and that's my best salad growing bed.
Yeah.
And there's enough residual light for them to. Yeah, they're probably a bit slower growing in the winter to get going, but they're the ones that I can always rely on. They're always there. And I grow spring onions in that bed as well. And I grow small kale plants in that bed just to take the baby leaf off. But all of those things I would be sowing now in the spring. That's the spring sowing.
Okay, so you mentioned like the grey mould if it gets too wet, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously trying to avoid that, like a good drainage. What other issues might you be likely to expect to face when you're growing these salad leaves, you reckon?
Well, for this point in time now, what you're going to mainly come up against with regards to pest damage will be slugs and snails if you're growing indoors. And I have had a huge problem with mice eating peas this year in the greenhouse in the polytunnel because the natural inclination of those animals to come inside where it's warm.
Yeah,
mate, I have re-sown so many peas.
Really?
So many peas.
Yeah.
And I've made a bit of a dent in it now. And I don't like doing it, but I have to control the numbers in there. But with regards to salads, there aren't that many insect pest pressures at the moment, right?
No.
And I would say that if you can get your irrigation right, so it's not that damp, you can probably negate some of the pest pressures with regards to slugs and snails. I would say that they will be your main pest if you're growing indoors or undercover.
Yeah,
I think you have to be aware that pigeons will hoover up anything at any point in any time. Yeah. So I would be protecting my, if I was just growing straight outside, I would be protecting mine with net. And I use those little net cloches, as you know.
Pigeons
like
munch the tops
rows.
Off, won't they? And
they'll be gone.
Small enough,
they'll be gone in a day. They'll be gone in a day, won't they? They get battered, and they look unsightly as well. But I would say that they would be your main pest pressures.
I would say that if you're growing some of the mixed leaf, like the cut and come again type, when some of the leaves in there will be susceptible to flea beetle damage.
This early in the year?
Not this early in the year, but going through.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a risk when you're sowing, particularly if you're sowing in seed trays, of damping off and things like that. So obviously good ventilation, using good clean water
and
on
not
your
over-sowing.
Seed always remains the same.
Not over-sowing.
But that's true for anything that you're sowing. You know, those clean water, good ventilation, not over-sowing, three things you should be doing with seeds regardless.
But lettuces are prone to it, aren't they?
Yeah, they are particularly prone. It's partly because of the soft cell walls, I think, of a lot of the lettuces, isn't it? They're quite thin cell walls, a lot of them. So obviously, and then the going through the year, it remains the same, really. The slugs and snails will be less of an issue when the lettuces are growing less strongly, when it's hotter.
Yeah, but then you get butterfly moth damage, so it's 6.5 dozen, isn't it? You're going to get, you know, if you're growing brassica leaf for salad, you're going to get cabbage white damage.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to get cabbage white fly damage. Yeah, yeah. So it is swings and roundabouts.
Yeah, absolutely.
There are some companion planting that you can do, and you know, certainly some of those French marigolds and things like that, they might help. And then you can eat them as well.
Yep.
Nasturtiums are particularly hit by cabbage white butterfly as well, aren't they?
They're quite good for that reason, though. They're sacrificial crops.
They are a sacrificial crop.
So,
The only other one that you... I mean, it's a bit late now. We'll talk about the summer stuff maybe as we roll into that. Oh. But there are obviously quite some
quite big edible flowers that you can munch away through as well.
Yeah,
particularly
of
courgette ones, you see.
Yeah, of course.
That.
Yeah, yeah.
And they won't be that far away, will they?
I wouldn't have thought so.
Not
no.
too far away.
No, no. So, just let's think about other tips and other things, because we mentioned the heat. Obviously, you can use shade netting, can't you? Are there any other things like that that you could use as tips to try and make?
Well,
this
what I would say to people is, what I would say to people is that I wouldn't rely on, right, I've got this one bed in my garden, all my leaves going in it. That's what I would not rely on.
No.
What I would do is I would have a bed like that. Mm-hmm. I would also try and find, and listen, you can get them for free. Mm. I would try and find as many containers, mm-hmm. or I would recycle containers to grow salad leaf in. And the thing to remember about salad leaf is, if you've got a big pot, you can fill probably 9/10 of it up with something other than soil, because you don't need a big depth of soil for salad leaf. It does
very
help,
shallow, aren't they?
Yeah, but it does help to have nutrient that you can turn over as you crop and stuff like that. But I would say, that's why those mushroom trays of compost work very well. I would suspect that the green trays would work really well. The Tesco or supermarket crates.
You want to fill the bottom of that with something other than soil, though, wouldn't you? Because that would be.
You can actually buy different heights of those, I've come to find out. I'm well up on it now, mate. Because I've ordered
a Tesco crate specialist.
I've ordered 100, that's why.
Oh, mate, you are a Tesco crate geek.
Well, you can buy different depths of those. Balearm crates is
Balearm crate, Tesco crates, everyone knows what I mean now.
But I've seen people growing salad in, so many different types of things, even down to milk bottle four pinters cut, slitted longitudinally and stapled on a fence and all sorts of things. But I'd have some inside. I'd have some on my windowsill. Yeah. I'd have some in shade areas.
Yeah.
I used to put probably about 4 or 5 of those blue mushroom compost, mushroom crates on my wood pile. And they actually didn't get any pest damage because they were high up off the ground.
So these are the shallow trays that the mushrooms are sold by the wholesalers.
They're normally blue.
They're normally
blue. And they're not that sturdy. You will have to put something in the bottom, but the mesh around the sides is close enough that you can hold the compost in without having to bring up the sides.
Yeah.
And you can get 6 plants in there. Mm-hmm. So you could get 6 kale. You could get 6 mustard greens. Mm. They're not going to grow to full size.
No,
you're going to be picking them constantly. You can get sorrel. You can get clatonia and things like that.
Yeah.
And they also then will go into an indoor space over winter to grow through. So I think they're really good then.
So the tip is then really to be cropping them, not letting them get to full size.
No. Oh, definitely
cropping
not.
Them regularly, almost weekly, daily. How frequently?
I think that well, this is going to go on to your next thing about how much, right?
Yeah, so, go on. How much is enough?
Well, that's going to obviously vary for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would suggest that if I had, in my salad bed is it's under 2 meters mm-hmm. by 120. So it's probably 190 by 120.
Mm-hmm.
And that grows nearly enough salad for 5 people with a few extra pots.
Mm.
And that's not that big, is it?
No.
No. And that's for 5 people, and certainly that would grow enough salad for us through the summer and the spring and a little bit into the autumn. I run out of a bit of space sometimes, but I also grow in containers, and I've got herbs in containers, which I don't have to give over that bed. That bed is literally leaf.
Yeah.
So I tend to have 2 rows of Tom Thumbs or something like that, which I'm cropping.
Mm-hmm.
I have a row of Lolo Rosso, which I'm cut and come again in.
Yeah.
All of my little baby leaves I grow in containers because it's so much easier.
Yeah.
There'll be spring onions in that bed
because
I like them. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's an integral part of that salad.
Yeah.
And I can sow them pretty thickly, 10, 12 in a bunch.
Yeah.
And literally
is
have
that multi-sown? Is it? You put them in a cell?
I put them in a cell.
Then
12 seeds. And when you look in the cell, you think there's no room for any soil.
Yeah.
But you get 12 blades of grass come up.
Yeah.
You plant that and then, it doesn't take long for them to come up. And you can snip the leaves off of those. And I might have 2 or 3 rows of those because they're obviously getting successively sown as we go. And then I might have a sorrel, literally one plant of sorrel's enough.
Mm-hmm.
One parsley's probably enough because they get huge.
Yeah.
And, you could really
2 or 3 landcress probably. I mean, I'm thinking about if you were so, because one of the things about it right now, right, it's really easy now. You sow lettuce now, you'll get some lettuce later on in the year, provided you look after it and keep the pests off it, whatever, right? And I reckon if you sowed some around about now and then again in about 6 weeks and again about 6 weeks, up until about, or whenever it starts to get really hot, cut and come again. You could sow your heading lettuce now. That takes 10 to 14 weeks. So if you did that now and then did another lot in 6 weeks' time, That's probably enough salad, right?
Yeah.
Depending on how long your rows are, obviously.
Yeah, and how much you eat, how many people are in your family.
What that would give you is a continuous supply. Yeah, right? That would give you a continuous supply. The problem is going to be then when the hot weather hits in June or July, normally in this part of the world.
Yeah.
That's going to slow right down.
Yeah, and unless I'm not going to suggest you sow then. Well, it depends what your growing conditions are like, but it's having the understanding to don't even bother sowing if it's 27 degrees. Yeah. Unless you've got a cool, shaded area, which you can sow in, which is consistently under 24, 25 degrees. They just won't germinate.
Yeah.
They won't germinate. Yeah. But there are obviously other things that come into play there, which you might have already, because some of those cut and come again things, if you can move them, if they're in pots, you can move them into the shade and they will keep going. Yeah. They will keep cropping. They won't bolt. Yeah. If you've got a bright, sunny bed, all your lettuces will be frazzled by July, you know. But if you're in pots or containers, you can move them into the shady side of your house or what have you, then that's fine. And there is shade netting. That is a thing. You can put things over your beds, which cast shade rather than, you know. So that's definitely something that you could do.
So what I'm thinking is that probably when it gets hot, June or July, whenever that might be, you would stop sowing for a bit. You can probably pick it up again in mid to late August in this part of the world, most of the time. I think last year was quite warm still.
Yeah.
It might have tailed off by then, I can't remember exactly, but once it starts to tail off again, it's not quite so hot. You can start sowing again, can't you?
To be honest with you, as we discussed at the beginning, that you get so many and they're so cheap, I probably would chance my arm in a shady part of the garden.
I probably would.
I'm not going to lie to you, I probably would. Yeah. But there are still then, as you get into that hot period, there are still those field plants that you can... you can forage from, you know, some of those wild greens, you know, whether that's cow parsley or your ramsons will be out by then. And there's lots of other things. It's very hard to replicate a leaf like we eat in salad in nature. They tend to be a bit coarser, a bit more hairy or a bit bitter.
Yeah.
And then, you know, your dandelion leaves are a classic example. Yeah. You can go and get dandelion leaves all through the summer, but unless they're closhed, you might have some dandelions in your front garden. You could put an upturned flower pot on it, and then they'll blanch out. Yeah, you could have a taste of that. They're way tastier.
Yeah,
and they don't have quite the same effect either.
So I've got another sort of a tip in terms of the harvest, which is that it's definitely better to harvest them in the morning.
Yeah,
and I think the sooner you can get them into cold water, the better. And what I would then be looking at in terms of that is, I like to go and harvest it. I like to wash it in cold water. I like to put it in my salad spinner and spin it out. And then with some of the water still in the bottom and the lid still on, the salad spinner, the whole thing goes in the fridge.
Yeah, yeah.
And that'll last for a few days like that, actually.
Yeah. You're better at that than I am.
Maybe, well, yeah, but the difference between me and you now particularly is that I'm growing it at the allotment and I'm going to the allotment every day, whereas you go to work every day where the salad's growing.
I don't pick salad at work.
You're not?
No, I pick salad at home.
Really?
Yeah, because I want to go and get it. I'll look at it. Yeah. If it looks grubby, I might run it under the tap and give it a shake. But other than that, I'm just going to eat it. Like, what am I going about?
So I'm going to wash it and I'm going to put it in the fridge. And
even putting it in a warm car is enough to ruin it after 2 minutes, isn't it? So be careful of that and how you do it. So if you are collecting salad from an allotment, it's probably a crop which is more suited to growing near your kitchen rather than your car.
Yeah, and then in terms of storage, obviously it's not going to keep more than a couple of days. There are ways to do it. The salad spinner is a good way. Plastic bag in the fridge is a good way.
Yeah, they're pretty good. You taught me that.
There's quite a bit of water in there and it's cold.
You taught me that. I've been using that.
It'll keep really well. So if you have picked more than you're going to use, that's a good way of keeping it for tomorrow, at least for a sandwich or whatever it might be. So what you can do, the last thing I wanted to talk about, and then when we're going through these other topics we're going to talk about, we'll come on to this as well, which is self-sufficiency a genuine possibility?
Definitely.
I think with salad leaves, it definitely is.
I think it is. I think that it's a good money saver.
Yeah, really is.
A really good money saver.
Yeah.
I think that it also, if you can, you know, when you go to the supermarket, you can buy a round lettuce or an iceberg lettuce. Might get a cos or a romaine. Mm. But the variety of things that you can grow yourself is far superior to that.
Yeah.
The taste is better, in my opinion, as well, because they're not just being bred to be shelf stable. Yeah. But I think that you can do quite a lot of different plants which come to fruition or harvest at different times as well. Yep. There are lettuces which are much more suited. They don't freeze, or they can freeze.
Yep.
Or there's other ones which are really quick at bolting in the heat, but they can stand a frost and things like this. And so you get the chance, if you take control of it yourself, to have salad all year round.
Yep.
I don't think it takes up that much space. There's a big difference between self-sufficient in salad leaf and being self-sufficient in potatoes, for
yes,
example.
Yeah.
Where, but salad leaf is something that you could get a hold of. The other reason I think it might be really good to get self-sufficient in salad leaf is I think it would make you cook differently. I think you'd explore a whole different culinary range because if you've got, you know, some really nice, sweet baby red Russian kale and some mustard greens, you probably won't make a just a normal salad. You'll think, what can I make with this?
Yeah.
You know, and so it probably leads you down other routes and paths, which I think then in turn makes you think, well, I could grow this next year. You get into a different thing.
I mean, there are definitely lettuces for the summer. Yeah. There are lettuces for the spring. There are even lettuces that will grow in the winter.
Undercover. I would say that there are lettuces which will stand in the winter better. Yeah. And they have the propensity to last in good condition and put up with frost.
Yeah. I think the only time it can be a bit difficult, maybe, is perhaps in the autumn.
What, having lettuces?
Yeah.
No.
No, you're happy, no, you're happy that yours will stand that long?
I've grown lettuces in that really hot tunnel all year.
Yeah. Okay.
The thing that always catches me out is looking and thinking, there's loads of lettuce.
Yeah.
I won't do any successional sowing this week.
Yeah.
And then in 8 weeks, I've got a gap because I didn't have them.
Yeah.
And so it is just about that, that plan. About
discipline of sowing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Once a month's probably enough if you can sow enough.
Yeah.
And I tend to grow mine now in, I'd sprinkle them in a flower pot or half a seed tray and then I prick them out.
Right.
That's something else people might need to think about because the germination rate's pretty high.
Yeah.
So if you put four in a cell, you're going to get four. Like four. Yeah. So
which if you're growing the leaf is okay. But if you're growing it for a heading lettuce, that's a bit of a problem.
Yeah. And also I would suggest that it's a problem, going back to when we just started this section, it's a problem for dampening off, if you're growing little gems.
Yeah,
you find that the ones in between, they never, and then they affect the rest of the crop and you get some browning off.
What will happen if you've got too many in a cell is that they'll get all leggy and then they won't actually come into, they won't head properly.
I tended to find that if I was growing some little clumps of small dwarf, the water actually can't get out of the leaf.
So they're
crowding together
and
then the water sits in and it can't drain out and then they kind of go... Soft and mushy. So about that drainage, really. But I would say that if you're someone who likes to eat lettuce all year, you could definitely do it. And if you're someone who likes to eat lettuce a bit more seasonally like I have, I don't think there's any reason to stop you doing it.
No.
And it's also a really good area, because it doesn't take up that much space, to experiment and use spaces which, if you don't use them in the winter, they don't tend to do anything else. So in my unheated greenhouse, if I don't put lettuce in it, I don't put anything else in it. And so it's like a banker, isn't it? It's like a catch crop. And so just by having some sowings in August, which you then put in these blue mushroom trays and you can fill all the shelves up, which would have had tomatoes on.
Yeah.
It doesn't take up any room. It doesn't take up any more effort. And then you go in sort of February and you go, wow, there's so stuff in here. Yeah. I forgot about all this.
Well, I remember doing some...
You don't even have to water them hardly.
No, I remember doing some under like a plastic little cloche thing that you gave me. I think your mum got for you or something, or an old one that you're hanging around. And I literally, all I did was I sowed them in August or whatever. And I got them up to a reasonable size.
Yeah.
And I planted them under this thing all winter and I just ignored it.
Didn't do anything. There's enough moisture in there.
Nothing. And then I lifted it off in like February or March. And there was, you know, some of them had gone, browned out or whatever. But there was, you know, half a dozen really nice lettuces. And guess what? They got eaten.
Yeah,
you know?
So
it's really good.
So I would definitely suggest people could have a go. And it would be nice to see what people would like to try. There is one, I'm going to maybe do a couple of varieties. Yeah? Do you want to do that?
Well, I think one of the reasons I've asked this is that I've got a plan to try and at least make sure that I've got some lettuce available.
Okay.
Right the way through now, as long as I can. I'd like to try and do it right the way through to this time next year.
Okay, we'll have a go, shall we? We'll have, every time we record, we'll ask, have you got any lettuce? And you go, yes or no.
Well, I'll do it right now. I've been having it for a bit.
I have.
Sowed some about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I sowed some. I've run out. No, this is it. The problem is, a lot of it's about the discipline.
Yeah.
It's about having the discipline to remember to sow and having space. And that's the other problem I have, is I run out of space.
Yeah.
Having the space to sow and germinate.
And the space to give up, because the lettuce I've got now... I probably sowed in August.
Yeah.
And it's so I've got Grenoble Red now at the moment, which is a beautiful flushed semi hearting. I would say I think it's called a butterhead probably.
Yeah.
And it's green with red tinge. Beautiful looking. Yeah. It's not growing very fast now.
No.
but I've got it there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can take, like, you know, I'll be honest with people here, I could take two or three leaves off each plant for my burgers.
Yeah.
I couldn't
yeah.
do a big
yeah.
family mixed salad yeah. in that row.
Yeah.
But if I had two or three rows, I could.
Yeah.
But I've also got Rocket, which has been superb,
mm-hmm.
and eating it all, and it's really coming into its own now. And I've got the Clatonia, which is miner's lettuce, which is a weird looking thing.
Yeah.
And you think, oh, that's a bit odd. And you cut it with scissors. It's delicious.
Yeah, really
good. Absolutely delicious. And I've got corn salad.
Yeah.
Right.
And I love corn salad as well.
I like corn salad yeah. as well. Lamb's lettuce.
I grew some good corn salad last year, I have to say. Yeah. But I think what that highlights is the one last thing I really want to say on the matter, which is that if you're out there and you're thinking, I fancy growing some salad, and you go out occasionally and you buy one of those bag salads, which has got those mixture of leaves in it, you'll be able to buy a lot of those in the shops and better ones.
Yeah.
And so it's then looking at going to your local garden centre, nursery, looking online, getting a seed catalogue, however you normally find your seeds,
yeah.
and looking at what options there are available, because there will be different lettuces yeah. for whatever purpose you want. And there'll be ones that you might not be familiar with. And what we're saying is that the more different types that you
yeah,
grow,
the better.
The more chance you've got
and
of
just,
having.
And just on that, I know that some supermarkets sell those microgreens mm. as like a they're in a pot. But yep. It's a shallow tray.
Yeah, almost like they do the herbs, yeah?
They do, yeah. yeah. And when you look at it, it's not designed for this, so mm. it's a little bit more experimental.
Mm.
You'd have to pull that out of that, it'd be a square tray.
Yeah.
And there'll hardly be any soil in it.
Yeah.
It will literally be yeah. more
seeds. They sell you a living salad, don't they?
They sell you a living salad.
Yeah.
But if you can pull those apart with yeah. with a bit of roots intact,
yeah.
you could probably sow your whole salad bed out of that.
Yeah,
because they're being designed to grow for people to have them in their on their windowsill for a
yeah.
week and then
yeah.
get another one.
Yeah.
But if you pull them apart, they'll probably even all, some of them will head up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those will be your Lolo Rosso. Some will be
yeah.
probably red beet or
yeah.
leaf beet or something like that.
I wouldn't be too surprised if some of them bolted.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you could literally space them out in a much bigger container
yeah.
and feed them water, and they would last you for a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, a lot longer than one.
And you could probably get those for, I don't know how much now, a couple of quid probably.
Don't buy them, do we?
Yeah, I haven't seen them in some of the cheaper supermarkets, you know.
No,
like,
Tesco's or
Sainsbury's. But you get them in Waitrose and places like that.
Them, yeah, I've
yeah.
seen them in there.
Anyway, yeah. but that's where we're at.
Right, well, thank you, mate, for that. I really appreciate it. Hopefully that's useful. I think I wanted to try and drill into something because we are at risk of rambling a bit too much.
No.
Yeah, we are. so we need to just have a think about what we'd like to do next time.
Yeah.
And there's quite a few ideas because I think when we meet next time, there's going to be a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
We're a lot to talk about because it's going to be really into the season. Obviously, we're going to be starting to get the swarm traps out for the bees and the honey and all that stuff.
I think next time,
yeah.
we could talk about being self-sufficient in eggs.
Eggs?
All right. Is this around that?
All right.
It'd be around Easter-y kind of egg time, and I think that I struggle to be self-sufficient in eggs, so it might help me a little bit in that.
So we're saying we're going to be self-sufficient in lettuce and in eggs this year.
I don't know. So being self-sufficient in eggs is a whole different ball game, isn't it?
I reckon I could get close.
Yeah, so let's talk about that.
Let's do it. All right, thank you very much for listening, everyone. We will speak to you again soon. Cheers. Bye-bye. So, ladies and gents, if you've enjoyed listening to the latest episode of the Homesteading UK podcast, please get onto our Facebook group, Homesteading UK Podcast Facebook group. Come and follow us on Instagram and all those good places. And please do tell all your friends about us and how much you've enjoyed listening. Come back again next time. Thank you very much for listening. Cheers. Bye-bye.